On Monday, India's government announced it would revoke the autonomy of the historically disputed region of Kashmir. The state's special freedoms were originally granted under Article 370 in India's constitution after the tumultuous partition of India and Pakistan in 1947. Indian authorities have severed all lines of communication in Kashmir, cleared out tourists, and sent in military troops, making it difficult to discern what's happening on the ground. Many in India are celebrating the integration of Kashmir, which is the only majority Muslim state in the country. But the region is already one of the most contested areas in the world, and this highly controversial move also raises tensions between India and Pakistan, two nuclear powers. Manan Ahmad is an associate professor at the Department of History at Columbia University, and he joined us in studio to talk about Kashmir. Manan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
India is a secular nation, technically, but Prime Minister Modi has been pushing a Hindu nationalist agenda. How does that, the integration of Kashmir, which is majority Muslim, fit into that?
Historically speaking, before this present regime, Kashmir was one of the demonstrations of India's secular constitution. It was a demonstration of the secular nature of India's democracy. And it was, in certain ways. But it was also a way in which Kashmiri people were subjugated and governed by New Delhi, by the state. I want to say that the rise of majoritarian politics throughout the world, Turkey, Pakistan, certainly, and, you know, Hungary and some might say United States, dovetails with the kind of agenda that the BJP has in India. And that majoritarianism in India looks like Hindu majoritarianism, where Muslims have been lynched for under the suspicion of eating beef. There are violence, a lot of violence, urban violence against Muslims who, most recently after this election, who refused to say Jai Shri Ram as a way of kind of acclaiming the supremacy of Lord Ram. So in this way, the majoritarian politics that we see around the world is very much in control in India as well.
We mentioned that there were celebrations in some parts of India about Kashmir's integration, but we're also seeing protests against the integration. Can you help us understand those two sides?
Thank you. That's very important. I mean, India is a very large, if some say the world's largest democracy. I would submit, however, that a lot of times the amount of information that is available about Kashmir to Indians is very low. And one can imagine, if I could make an analogy here, that how many Americans know what is the status of Native people on reservations in this country, or even how many people know what is happening in Puerto Rico and why the people of Puerto Rico are on the streets right now. So a typical citizen would have a very narrow and perhaps romanticized view of Kashmir that they may have gotten from movies or from their politicians. In that sense, Article 370 was one of the planks of the BJP as early as late 80s and into the 90s. And this part of their political campaign was always to say that if Kashmir was quote-unquote normalized, they will be able to, as in the Indian state, will be able to settle, quote-unquote settle that territory, quell its political demand for self-recognition or plebiscite. And in that sense, I think there are many, many people who are very happy that this has happened. This has been long-held demand. This is why BJP was voted into power. On the other hand, there are conscientious scholars and Indians who recognize that Kashmir is under what we may call a severe military occupation. There's been, I think the word most associated with Kashmir is curfew. You know, if you're my generation, if you were born any time after 1970, you would know that Kashmiris have lived their lives under curfew. They have physical checkpoints. Any Indian troop can enter their house, search them, and search their possessions. Kashmiris can be taken away, are frequently tortured. So that is actually the reality, and it very well is that many ordinary Indian citizens are just not aware of that.
And finally, what does this do to the relationship between India and Pakistan?
I think that India and Pakistan are and have been, you know, in great military stress for much of their existence and have gone to active war and, as you pointed out, are nuclear powers. I would suggest that, you know, the way in which we can say that India or the Indian state is playing to their majority, Pakistani state, which has been largely governed by its military, has its own agenda where they've used Kashmir as a way to mobilize right-wing politics in their own country. They have obviously supplied weapons and terrorists to different parts of Kashmir in order to stoke certain things. So they are certainly part of the problem. And Pakistan has still not officially said anything, as in they have said that we're formulating our response. But I would suggest that we think actually, instead of thinking about and foregrounding the actions of the states like India and Pakistan, we think about the Kashmiri people who have been rendered speechless through this process. And what will the Kashmiri people do? I think that's really the key question, because the Kashmiri demand for self-determination is not a new demand, has been going on since 1930s. It's part and parcel of anti-colonial movement. And the Kashmiri people have not been heard at any stage of this entire 20th century. And even now in the 21st century, we find them muted. We find their voices silenced. And I feel most passionately that that is the voice that we should seek. We should try to find that voice. We should try to enable that voice. India and Pakistan are kind of like playing the same playbook. They have been playing over and over and over and again. And, you know, I can certainly predict that Pakistan will say, we do not recognize India's right over Kashmir. Kashmir is, you know, our territory. And India will say, Kashmir is our territory, and so on and so forth. And both sets of governments will be very happy to take this belligerence to their vote banks and to their supporters, and continue to kind of make their politics about that. And I think in all of this drama, the Kashmiris are the ones who are speechless.
Manan Ahmad is an associate professor in the Department of History at Columbia University. Manan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.